Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
This is Max and Friends. Happy holidays. Hit it.
Happy holiday. Happy holiday. May the calendar keep bringing happy holidays to you.
Get your burden down with trouble. If your nerves are wearing thin,
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
Welcome to Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I can't with this show and happy holidays. How's everyone doing? Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good karma, wherever you are in this world tuning in. I'm so grateful that you're here. If it's your first time joining me on Max and Friends, welcome to the show. The first time you're friends, the second time you're family. Tonight we have a packed, awesome, fun show. We have joining me in just a moment, the one and only Carla Hall from ABC The Chew. Check your local listings. Carla's here with some updates on her restaurant, plus a yummy, yummy, yummy dish for the holidays. Then coming up, we have Kit Shapiro. Now, Kit Shapiro, put that together. What does that sound like? Eartha Kitt. Well, her daughter is Kit Shapiro, and Kit will be joining us tonight talking about life and a really great thing for the holidays from Simply Eartha. Accessories that say something. So stay here for that. And then right after Kit Shapiro, Becky Diamond wrote a book called The $1,000 Dinner. Goes back to Delmonico's back in the day when $1,000 would be at least $32,000 today. So back then in 1851, it was kind of a big deal to spend $1,000 on dinner. And of course, it was at Delmonico's. So Becky Diamond will be joining me later on in the show. But right now, Carla Hall, deck the halls with Carla Hall. How are you, Carla Hallin'?
I'm decking.
You're decking? We crazy tonight.
It's great, it's great to be here with you.
Yes, thank you. Well, listen, you've got so much going on. Give us the scoop on the restaurant. What's happening? Because we need to know.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's taking a lot longer, and people told me to anticipate that, and I thought I was being patient. But so it's taking a lot longer than we thought, but it probably works out that it's not open yet because the holidays, people are doing other things. So our floors are in. The wallpaper was hung a couple of days ago. All of
the
doors and windows. I know, right? And the chimney, right? And Santa's coming down the chimney. So we're basically waiting on the equipment to finish the kitchen. And we are getting, which we're putting the final touches on and thinking about what our plateware and our disposables will be and all of that. And we just set the menu and the pricing. So, I mean, it's happening. It's just all of these little details. And I feel like it's all, and I'm working on the founder's wall right now. So I'm going through the names and making, you know, little changes and making sure that people's names are spelled correctly.
You are checking the list twice. We are totally on
the
holiday
spree. I literally am checking the list twice.
You have hung the wallpaper by the chimney with care, and you are checking the list twice. You are Santa Claus.
It is so funny. It is so true. Yes.
So listen, Deck the Halls, I need to know what's going on because, you know, I gave my donation to you when you were doing that thing, and it was amazing how much money
yes.
you raised in such a short time. So, and you know what I'm going to tell you, because I always say to you, Max and Friends, where you are at this exact moment is exactly where you're supposed to be.
That's exactly it. I believe that. I believe that you are where you're meant to be.
And that's the simplicity. So, you know, it's like when there's a great saying that my grandmother used to say is that when we plan, God laughs. So, you know, just,
yes.
you know,
yes.
you are Miss Yogi. You are Om Shanti Om. Like, just breathe. Right? So it's all
yes.
good. It's all good. But and why it's even better is because when that opening happens, I'm going to be there, like, getting my finger licking good on, and I'm going to bring, like, some tinfoil, too. So
let's Right.
Okay. So
But you know what, Max? Since that time, I opened a bakery, Carla Hall Bakes, and it's at the Gansevoort Market, and so that's exciting, too. So we're doing all of the petite cookies and the bars and pies and cakes and, like quick cakes and pound cakes. So that's exciting, too.
It's all exciting. And then you're on the Chew. We see you on the Chew. And you're chilling with Wendy Williams and having a good time.
Yes.
That was fun. And those boots were kick-ass, girl. I was like, you better work them boots, Carla Hall.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, we got a tweet here, and maybe you want to address it or not, but people are asking, what's about the gray?
Oh, my God. Well, the gray, I just, my temples are so white that I got tired of spending time at the hair salon getting my hair done, because after 2 weeks, my hair would grow out, and that I just didn't want to spend my time that way. So what I have done is just, like, worked it into my hairstyles, but I think that the woman who's doing my hair right now, her name is Christy Bright. She is working it, and she actually gave me bangs one day. She gave me the long ponytail another day, and she blended three colors of hair, black, brown, and gray. And I loved it, because I think gray doesn't mean that you're old.
No.
Right.
It just means that you're living life.
Right. Girl, living life with a little bit of wisdom.
You know, and all of a sudden they come out of nowhere. I got this streak, and I know that it's in my DNA because my family has it. It's like right in the center, and I just think it's regal. But I had a holiday party last night. Everyone's like, "Oh, you have this gray streak." I'm like, "Say it one more time."
We're like, "Right, say it like, one more again."
Why do you have such a stank on it? Like, that's nobility. Leave me alone.
You know, I just think everybody should do whatever makes them feel good. Thanks. And if somebody looks at my hair and they don't like gray hair, then they should color their hair, but they shouldn't feel like they have to tell me what to do to my hair.
That's right. Well, with that said, let's get back to tinfoil, because the holidays are here, and I had a whole little skit last night about tinfoil and how I sometimes show up to parties with tinfoil. Now, it is what it is, because I know that there's going to be some good grub, but when the grub isn't good and you want to bring something, can you give us a hookup on what we can do this holiday season?
I tell you, there are a couple things that I think, something that is crazy, crazy easy. And speaking of tinfoil, you can actually, with or without tinfoil, you can bake sweet potatoes. And I'm not even talking about canning them, but if you bake sweet potatoes, take them out, take a little bit of orange juice, orange zest, and olive oil, mash them in salt and pepper, mash them. You get such an amazing puree that is so delicious, so simple, and you're like, what? And to that, you can add other things. If you wanted to add nuts on top, if you wanted to add more sweetness by adding maple syrup, you can do that too. But what I love about that is that the texture is so beautiful, and the olive oil keeps it really light. And it's delicious.
You know what I would add to it, and just be totally, I would put mussels with that, because that sounds good. I know,
mussels?
It sounds weird. Yes, you're like, wait a minute. Yes,
No, but I'm like, oh, mussels, because you get that brininess, and you have this olive oil and slightly sweet, and you can even add a little bit of cayenne or red chili flakes to that too.
Yeah, because I used to do a pumpkin soup, right? And I would put mussels in the pumpkin soup, and people would freak out, but delish.
Yes. Go ahead. Bonbon.
You see, bonbon wee-wee, how you doing? So listen, Miss Karma, Miss Yoga, what's something else quick we can get? Because that sounds delish.
There's something else that I want to share. I mean, this is the season that a lot of people are doing cookie exchanges, and they want to do things or take something, and sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know what to take. One of the things that I love are haystacks, and that's when you take cereal, and not the Rice Krispies, but you may take cornflakes and mix things in with chocolate. So if you take chocolate, a little bit of dark chocolate, you can do milk chocolate, you can do dark and milk, mix that with the cornflakes, and then fruit and nuts. So I happen to like golden raisins and pecans, or golden raisins and toasted almonds, and mix that up, and then just drop them on a parchment covered sheet pan, and let them get hard. You can pop them in the refrigerator for a couple minutes. It is so delicious and so stupidly simple that it's crazy. Another thing that you can do, take graham crackers, make a caramel, and I like to make caramel with a little bit of salt and a little bit of vinegar because it's that balance. Drizzle the caramel over the graham crackers and then, again, toasted pecans. What? Break them up. It feels like bark. Delicious.
You better work that. Now, listen, speaking of working, you have, like, so many books. Which one are you pushing out?
So I have Carla's Comfort Foods from Around the World, and then I have Cooking with Love, which is my first cookbook, and then I have Comfort Foods favorite dishes from Carla's
all
Comfort
of them.
Foods favorite dishes from around
you're
the
like,
world.
You're like, just
yes.
Get all the books and stuff them in your stockings, okay? No, really, because now's the time of the year to buy these books because they're uh-huh. perfect gifts, you know, and especially like holiday parties. People showed up last night and they're like, here, we bought you a bottle of Chirac. I'm like, first of all, I have my own vodka, so thank you. But bring me a cookbook because I think that's always like the best gift. And one of Carla Hall's, you bring that to my house, we'll start cooking in the kitchen. But Carla,
well, there you go.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's the gift to bring. And never go show up empty-handed, tacky. But bring a Carla Hall book. I'm really excited because I have to like segue into this, and then we got to say goodnight because we got a million people coming on tonight. But you are contributing to the Oscars Delmonico book, and you're doing like a really good Baked Alaska. I'm really excited. And I have
the Baked Alaska and the secret, and I know everybody has their secrets, but the secret for me is to make the perfect meringue. And I do individual ones.
All right, here's the deal. I'm going to be in New York in a couple of weeks. You and I are going to go to Delmonico's, and we're going to have a Baked Alaska at Delmonico's. That sounds good?
Let's do it. That sounds amazing.
We'll figure that out. It's going to be delicious. And I look forward to your restaurant opening. I will be there. So we can just follow you on Twitter at Carla Hall. It's that simple, right?
That it's that simple. And you guys, I'm hoping that we're going to be open after the holidays, at least by February. Yay. I know it keeps changing, but yay.
And tell everybody where the restaurant is located.
The restaurant is 115 Columbia Street. That's the Columbia Street waterfront in Brooklyn, New York. And it's between Cobblehook and Red Hook. And it's a really nice community. And just think of it as Grandma's Table, where you're going to have Sunday supper every day of
and
the week.
What's the name of the restaurant?
It's Carla Hall's Southern Kitchen, and it's Nashville's Hot Chicken and Southern Sides.
So if you guys are in the Brooklyn neighborhood, go by, hashtag Carla Hall's Southern Kitchen, and we're going to see what's going on in your neighborhood with Carla Hall. Thank you for joining us tonight on Max and Friends, Carla Hall.
Well, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, and we look forward to watching you this week on The Chew on ABC.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, darling. I just love me some Carla Hall. This Christmas, I don't want nothing for Christmas but love. But Eartha Kitt once sang a song called Nothing for Christmas on Max and Friends. And when we're back, Kit Shapiro joins me.
I'm getting nothing for Christmas. Poor little Eartha is sad. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. Cause I didn't want to be bad. Jim promised me a sable coat just for a little kiss, a diamond ring and motorboat just for a little kiss. He said I'll buy out the stores, everything I have is yours. I will be your Santa Claus just for a little kiss. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. My little Jimmy is mad. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. Cause I didn't want to be bad. Jack promised me a ruby clip just for a tiny squeeze, a wardrobe plus a Paris trip just for a tiny squeeze. He said, dear, be nice to me, and on Christmas Day you'll see presents round your Christmas tree just for a tiny squeeze. But I'm getting nothing for Christmas. My little Jackie is mad.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Eartha Kitt. Nothing for Christmas. But if you're going to get something for Christmas this year, then y'all have to go right now to Simply Eartha, because there's some accessories there that say something, and they are perfect for the holiday season. Well, Kit Shapiro, the daughter of the late, great international star Eartha Kitt, joins me right now, and we're going to have some fun here tonight on Max and Friends. Welcome to the show, Kit Shapiro.
Thank you so much. I love that song. That's a song you don't get to hear very often, because Science Baby takes over so often, but that one's a good one.
That all of them are good ones, right? They're all good ones.
She had an amazing voice.
And what I love about recordings, you know, because I really have a lot with family history too, is like when you have those recordings, their energy is like constantly around us, right?
So
it's fun. I love to have that. But let's talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about you, because you have an unconventional journey as you continue to evolve as a successful entrepreneur, wife, mother, and young adults. What's going on in your life, and how was it to grow up as the daughter of Eartha Kitt?
Well, since I didn't have any other parent to compare to, it was the only one I got, it was a very interesting life, needless to say. You know, I mean, she named me Kitt. She gave me her name. She used to introduce us and say, "I'm Eartha, and this is Kitt," as if I completed her somehow. And I think in many ways I did. You know, it was very interesting. It was, you know, she was an amazing woman. She didn't have family. She was an orphan. She was born in the South. Her given name was Eartha, and she was truly connected to nature and the environment and just life in general. She lived every day to its fullest. And she was, you know, as I look back, obviously now as an adult, you kind of, you know, hindsight is 20/20. So you look back and you realize, wow, I mean, she really came from a place that was just absolute instinct and was, you know, right on. She listened to her gut, and it you know, for the most part, never failed her.
It never fails any of us. Now, here's the thing I've got to tell you. My producer and I were talking earlier about the show. There's like never been another Eartha. None of us know another Eartha, and there's like, we've been around. So it's just amazing how, like, when you hear the name Eartha, there's only one, really.
That's true.
Do you know another Eartha out there?
I mean, now that I'm, you know, from social media, I see people who, you know, whose names are Eartha, obviously, mm-hmm. but not that, you know, I mean, certainly it's mm-hmm. Certainly not a common name. A little bit more common in the South, from what I can understand, but not, I haven't come across very many Earthas.
Right? And when you hear Eartha, of course, like, my mother's like, oh my God, when I hear Eartha, she's like, I go back to the Carlisle, and she was just so adorable, and she would be sprawled on the piano, and I was like, oh Mom, do you want to come on the show tonight? She's like, honey, I'm having a martini. I won't make it. I was like, all right, but I'll let Kit know about your story. So that's my mother's story.
I love it.
And you know, what's really fascinating is now we're doing, and I'm pushing it, so shameless plug, but I'm doing a book on my grandfather's restaurant, Oscar's Del Monaco. And when I go through all of these like 1950s and so on, the advertisements that they ran literally right next to Del Monaco's is Eartha Kitt here, Eartha Kitt there. I mean, it was unbelievable the amount of shows your mother did, and like constantly on the road. Did you go with her?
I did. You know, I traveled extensively. She believed that travel was the best education, something you can't learn in a book, to see what other people live like, other countries are like, other cultures. And so she took me with her everywhere, you know, when certainly for most of my life until I was a teenager and I decided, I don't want to go with my mother anymore. It's not cool. But before she got the teenage rebellion coming, I went everywhere with her. And it was really, really interesting. I mean, obviously, at the time, I didn't necessarily appreciate it. You know, I was a typical kid. But the education that I got and what I learned and what I saw was an appreciation of the world and of life in general that, you know, is just just amazing. I mean, I certainly see as a parent how the difference between how my kids are raised and how I was raised is, you know, like night and day.
Night and day, night and day. Now, you know, you've got this amazing thing happening called Simply Eartha. Tell us about Simply Eartha and how it kind of like got into your being. It find you, or did you find it?
Wow, boy, I think it sort of found me as life tends to you know, unfold in front of us. When my mother died Christmas Day, 2008, mm-hmm. And which, you know, the irony in that, given that Santa Baby was her most famous song, is not lost on me or anybody who knew her. You know, it just seemed appropriate that she would die on Christmas Day to make a final statement that, you know, Santa Baby was the song she sang, she made famous, and everybody was going to remember that she sang it, and because she died on Christmas Day, and she took it with her, she put her stamp on it. My entire life, I mean, I'm an only child, my entire life, my mother said to me, if I've touched it, if I've written it, if I've, you know, done something to create it, don't throw it away. When I die, don't let it die with me. You need to take it and do something with it. Put your stamp on it. This legacy that I'm building is for you to then do something to carry it on to the next generations. And so when she died, you know, after we were very, very close, needless to say, I worked for my mother for 30 years and for Eartha Kitt Productions, and we traveled together. We lived near each other. And so I'm faced with, you know, all of her things, needless to say. And she was a big writer. She loved to write and to read. She loved the art of conversation. She loved words. So there are thousands of pieces of paper that I'm faced with in her house. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this woman was a hoarder, first of all. She hasn't thrown anything away since 1952.
That's a good thing, though. That's a good thing. It
yeah.
is. Because except we get to throw it out, and in the meantime, we get to make money off of what they saved.
Yes, but now you're faced with, you know, what can I throw out? I'm afraid to throw anything out because the woman will, like, drop a house on my head or something. I mean, you know, I have.
But that's when you can call, like, all the museums and be like, I have some of Eartha's stuff. And they're like, we'll take it. Do an auction, girl. You know how many queens would buy that stuff?
Yes, I have a lot of stuff that I'm going to start putting out there for people to because, you know, what's very funny is you say that, because her fans, she thought her fans were the greatest. They were family to her. And so my mother didn't believe in having expensive jewelry or expensive pieces of art. What she loved was having the pieces that her fans gave her, some of it being, whether it be handmade, handwritten, or even store-bought. If somebody took the time to give it to her, and she kept it, and she could remember every story behind every piece. So I have all of these wonderful, you know, relics of her life. And, you know, so you look at all these things and you say, what do you do with it? And the writings, the words started to really sort of just pop out at me and realize that, you know, the art of conversation was so important to her that it's now my turn to give voice to her words. And so now I take her words and I put them on accessories. And they're not necessarily the most profound words, you know, something as simple as don't panic, or something where she would say, my flaws make me who I am, because she truly embraced who she was. But what I love about it is that you pass it along to somebody who then says, oh my goodness, my, you know, daughter could really use those words, don't panic. Now, my mother would say to me, don't panic, because it doesn't change a thing and it just makes it difficult to see the opportunities or the lessons that are, you know, in front of us that we're supposed to be experiencing in that moment. And so when I put don't panic on a bracelet or on a candle and somebody hands it to their relative or their friend who's going through a difficult time or who is very nervous or who, you know, or my daughter who's in college and she's got her sorority sisters wearing the don't panic bracelets during their exams, you know, you realize that it just sort of reinforces that the reminder, take a breath, take a beat. You know, that's remember that this is not life or death, God, hopefully. You know, this too shall pass. And it's just wonderful to see other people then start to converse about things and they share it and the words become their own or they become somebody else's. And I see that as being little parts of my mother, like just being sprinkled around and sharing, you know, her philosophy with other people.
You know, and it's so true, and it's so beautiful. And there's a wonderful saying that says, every time you say my name, my spirit shall live. And I really believe, so every time that someone gets this gift and your mother's name is on it, it's like her spirit lives on, her legacy lives on, and you're like doing that. That's so, I love it. That's why I think, you know, when I was going through Max's favorite things and like gift giving and everything, and I was looking at her saying, like, we got to talk about Simply Eartha, because it's not only what you're doing with your mother's words and wisdom and everything, but it's something that, like, everyone can do. We can take our parents' favorite sayings and write them down. So it's inspiring in the sense where we really have to cherish them and remember the sayings and remember what our parents taught us. And here you are now with Simply Eartha. And you say, may they touch your heart as they do mine. So how has the public received Simply Eartha?
Oh, the beauty of being able to hear from strangers, because social media is so wonderful, and certainly for this, that you hear people who share their stories of my mother, whether they had met her or didn't meet her, just from knowing who she was, learning her story, listening to what she had to say, watching her, and now then seeing what I'm doing. People give me such amazing love, and it touches my heart, and I know my mother is beaming somewhere, because it just is so amazing how I am embraced, and the love that I see that other people give me and feel is just really, really empowering. And you know, it's interesting because one of the things that I have is my mother's heart. She would draw. She loved to draw, doodle as she was sitting on the phone or something. So she drew these hearts, and I took one of these hearts and I put it on different pieces, and I've made this amazing blanket with her hearts all over it. And it's made of recycled T-shirts and it's everything's made in the United States, because my mother really felt that local artisans and making things in the United States was so, so important. So this blanket I look at and I see her hearts everywhere, and I think, wow, that's just someone's going to put that on their bed or put that on their sofa and see love and hopefully feel love, and it makes me feel great.
My birthday's Valentine's Day, so that's just around the corner. So that is the perfect gift.
If
y'all want to give me something, go to Simply Eartha. But hold on. You know what? Stay with me, because when we come back, I want to talk about your mom's scary scenario with stage 3 colon cancer. But even though that happened, here we are now, and we can talk about it, and there's awareness. So when we come back from this song, we'll talk a little bit about it. So stay with me and Kit Shapiro here on Max and Friends right now. We couldn't do this show without Santa Baby.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa Baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa Baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa Baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa Baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa Baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa Baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa Baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany's. believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Santa Baby Eartha Kitt. And joining me right now is Kit Shapiro. Kit, when you hear that song, what does it do to you?
Well, it makes me smile because I just think it's the cutest, sweetest thing ever. And she just sounds, you know, like so adorable. And it was recorded in 1953, so she was adorable at the time. And she little, you know, that tiny little, that little voice that matured as she got older and became, you know, even richer. But then it was, you know, still that sort of very cute and vibrato, you know, sexy voice, which I love. But what I love the most is, you know, you as I walk through the stores like everybody else does, you know, all of a sudden I'll be in a, you know, a Bed Bath & Beyond or in
like,
Pottery Barn.
That's my mom.
And I hear my mother and I'm like, all right, really? I mean, come on. It's like,
right, and then if you're like, oh, that's my mom. And everyone's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right. Another crazy lady.
But, you know, I want to talk because we got a great tweet, Facebook actually, and they ask, where did your mother get her purr from?
She got her purr from practicing doing vocal exercises. When she was a dancer with Catherine Dunham and went over to Paris and with the company and learned how to speak French and how to roll your R's and you know she just evolved and I think it just sort of became one of her exercises and then she started to use it. Because I think a lot of times when she would sing, she would say she forgot the words, and so she would start these, you know, purring sounds just because
it
just seemed, you know, it worked, and yeah, it just became her you know, what
signature.
She was known for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And no, the answer is no. I cannot do it.
do a million other things, so that's okay. But you know, I've got to say, everyone, if you're looking for holiday gifts and they're coming around the corner and Christmas is almost here and you feel like you have to buy something, buy Boomerang also, because it's one of my favorite movies. And it hasn't been, like, I haven't seen Boomerang in years, so find the DVD, get it, and get Boomerang, and you'll love me for it. If you haven't seen it, you'll know why. But all right, we've got to talk about this, and we got, you know, it's like we've got to bring it down a little bit, but there is hope. So we've got to talk about the Colon Cancer Alliance and also screening and early detection and why it's become so important to you.
Well, my mother, as I said, my mother died from colon cancer. She was 81 years old at the time of her death. She'd never had a colonoscopy until right prior to her diagnosis, and by the time she had her colonoscopy, she was already stage three colon cancer. So, you know, there's this whole issue with this feeling that, you know, a colonoscopy and screening is invasive and it's very difficult, but it isn't. I mean, it's you're not awake. It's not like you're, you know, awake when they're doing the colonoscopy. The prep for a colonoscopy just isn't that big a deal. It's a liquid, you know, diet the day before, and it's not the most pleasant. But colon cancer is the second largest cancer killer in the United States, and yet it is so treatable and beatable when it is found early. And a colonoscopy is the easiest way. If they find a polyp, they literally, while they're in there, they snip it off and it is done. So I can't emphasize enough to people the importance of getting screened for colon cancer. It affects men and women, all races, all ages. It is not an old person's disease. So don't fool yourself.
No. You know, there's all these sayings like get your tatas squeezed and everything. People, go get your colon caressed and find out what's going on. That's, you know, my new phrase for that.
Well, I love that phrase because, you know, I keep saying to people, you know, talking about our colons is not as sexy as talking about our breasts, but yet.
Unless you're gay. I mean, that is a hot thing.
Then, you know, then, of course, But it's, you know, I've been trying to get Charmin with the Bears, you know, because it's like, let's wipe out colon cancer. I mean, it's toilet humor, people. It writes itself. You know, it's like, come on, we talk about everything else. Let's just talk about that. And let's get rid of this disease. It's not necessary for people to be dying from colon cancer.
It's not. And you know what? Unfortunately, it happens. And unfortunately, we lose a lot of great people to it. So just seriously, just go get screened, people. That's all we have to say here. But Kit Shapiro, before I let you go, where can people find Simply Eartha?
They can find Simply Eartha on www.simplyeartha.com. And it's a really, really cool site. I write a blog on there as well, and I give anecdotes about, you know, my life growing up with my mother, which is was never dull and always an interesting take on learning and teachings that she had. So it's a really fun place. And in her writings, I have some of the pieces are in her own handwriting with her image. And other pieces are just fun words to share with others and to keep conversation with your family. Keep connecting with your family. You know, put down the phone, people. Put down the other games and sit and talk to each other and look at each other. And my mother loved that. That to her was so, so important, that human connection. And let's continue that. Let's keep that going, because without our connections to each other, we have nothing.
We have nothing. And that's why we have Max and Friends, so we could all connect here.
Love it.
Could just continue to talk about life, about love, about the divine Eartha Kitt and Kit Shapiro. Thank you for keeping your mother's spirit alive. Thank you for keeping her energy in our households and in our minds. And keep doing your thing with Simply Eartha. And we'll have you back on in February, too, so we could promote the line for Valentine's Day. Because it is
perfect.
There's your purr, girl. There's your purr. But we'll talk after the show. I've got to go because Becky Diamond is waiting here, and she's like, I've got to get on because we've got to talk about Delmonico's. Kit Shapiro, thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you sooner than later.
Big kiss. Okay. Talk to you later. Ciao. All right. We're going to play Champagne Taste, and we're going to get Becky Diamond on. We're going to talk about the $1,000 dinner. Delmonico's. Hit it.
You wanna take me cruising on an ocean liner to places I long to see? Well, with my champagne taste and your beer bottle pockets, don't forget to write me when you get there in your rowboat, when you paddle across the sea without me. Do you see us dining on caviar and pheasant with descendants of royalty? Well, with my champagne taste in your beer bottle pocket, I'll be having pheasant while you're dining with the peasants, dunking donuts in a diner without me. You said you...
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Hey to Ford, who's tuning in. I hear me. We'll fade out in a minute. I know Becky can hear me too, echoing, but I just have that echoing voice. Here's the thing, y'all. There's a new book. And of course, right away, like moths to a flame, can you feel my desire? The $1,000 dinner. Why does this book mean so much to me? Well, because my grandfather's restaurant, Delmonico's, is in it. And Becky Diamond, well, she's here tonight, and we're going to talk about this extraordinary dinner, this fantastic book that you all have to go get right now on Amazon.com. Stick it in your stockings, stick it under the tree, wherever you need to stick it, and get it, because it's called The $1,000 Dinner. Welcome, Becky Diamond.
Hi, how are you?
Talk about a kooky setup. I'm great. I'm so grateful that you're here tonight. So we got
to
jump into this.
I'm thrilled to be here.
You got to tell us what this book is about. $1,000 dinner.
Well, it stems from an annual culinary competition between two groups of wealthy men one from New York and one from Philadelphia. And it resulted in this $1,000 dinner because the New Yorkers had the dinner first at Delmonico's in New York, threw a fantastic meal there, and then they invited the Philadelphians down. They invited the New Yorkers down to Philadelphia, and James Parkinson's restaurant there threw this $1,000 dinner. It was just incredible. It was 17 courses, took place over 12 hours, and just amazing things on the menu. Turtle and small game birds and pieces of Monty's, which were these huge sugar sculptures, pastries, wines paired with every course, just amazing, over the top. And, you know, the gentlemen just had the times of their life. They stood up three times in appreciation, just saying this is the best dinner we ever had.
Now, incredible. Speaking of this best dinner that they've ever had, have you had dinner at Delmonico's, Becky Diamond?
I have not. I would love to.
Oh, my God. You and I are going. We are so going. We're going to have Carla Hall, you, and we'll have Kit Shapiro. All three of us will go. We'll have a Max and Friends.
I would love that.
Now, have you tried any of the recipes that are in the book?
I actually have on my blog, on my website, www.beckyldiamond.com. I have tried some of the dishes, mostly the pastry and baked goods, coconut pudding, lemon pudding, wafer cookies, meringues. It's been really fun doing that, going back in time and seeing, you know, what they did then how delicious.
You know, I have the book 1827, one of the original cookbooks, and you're contributing to my book, so I'm excited for that. But when I go back to this cookbook and I see what it took, like just to make like a simple sauce, it was like refer to recipe 398, refer to recipe 752, you had to refer to like 50 different recipes to get to one simple one. It was insane. But what fascinated you so much about this $1,000 dinner that you're like, I have to write a book about it?
Yeah, I just thought that, for one thing, I had never heard of it, and I have been writing about food now, you know, for about 5 or 6 years. And I'm a foodie. I love cooking. And I'm also from the Philadelphia area originally. And this is a big thing for Philadelphia. You know, it still continues today, this huge Philadelphia-New York rivalry going on. And there's so many firsts to Philly. You know, everyone knows it's the site of the Independence Hall and all these historic sites and everything. But also Philadelphia was a huge food, it was really the food capital of the U.S. before New York kind of took it over. And I just thought this is something that not only Philadelphians would want to know about, but the whole country, the whole world. You know, this is a dinner that's just was so over the top, incredible. And you know, so much of our history can be learned through food.
Lots of it. You know what's so interesting, Becky Diamond, if you're joining us right now for the first time, thanks for tuning in to Max and Friends. Becky Diamond, the author of The $1,000 Dinner, is joining me now. We're talking about Delmonico's, we're talking about Philadelphia, we're talking about culinary delights and food and foodies and whatnot, and we're just talking. But what I find most fascinating about the book is that literally one night, and this is going back to like 1851, you know, tonight, we go to dinner now, $1,000 is really easy to spend on dinner, especially if you're in New York and LA or whatnot. But then, you know, if we do the inflation calculator, it was like $32,000 or something.
Exactly. You
know, and people do have dinners for that. But what I find most fascinating is that you were able to, like, discover all of this, put it all together. How long did it take you to do the research for this book?
It was about 3 years, I think. Well, the research, maybe not quite that long, but definitely a couple years of just researching, and then the writing part, probably another year or so.
How did you get interested in writing?
Well, my background, I went to college for journalism was my major. So, you know, I learned how to write analytically, and I like that type of writing, like taking a subject and really analyzing it and telling people what's interesting about it, sort of thing. And then I also went to library school after that for my master's degree. So I love the research. And the two just go hand in hand when you're writing about you know, historical topics or something, you know, that you just really need to do some good research and then write it in a way that's going to be interesting to people. And I, that's what I love to do now. It's fantastic. And I'm then, a foodie, as I mentioned. So that's,
oh, yeah.
That's just,
it all, it know, all just so fits together. And then all right. of a sudden, out of the blue, I get a tweet. I got a tweet from you, and you're like, right. I did a book called The $1,000 Dinner. And I'm like, I called my editors, and I called my book project manager, Donald. I was like, Donald, this is like going to blow your mind, but there's someone that did. He's like, I need to speak to them right away. I was like, I got to have her on my show. And then now we've Aww. Asked you to be part of this, of our book that we're doing, which is another, I mean, it's taken a long time, so I get it, but... You know, how was it to have a book like this, The $1,000 Dinner, and then all of a sudden, here we are now, like my grandfather had the restaurant, and we all know about mm-hmm. the history of Delmonico's, and here you are, and you're like, your book is touching like a lot of people because they're, I see you, you're busy, you are book touring right. it up, you're busy, so how is it to have this book, it's like books are babies, I mean, the book I'm working on now is like mm-hmm. my son, I call him, but how is right. it to have book flourish and have people buy it and really be like, wow, this is actually cool. It's like the first Chopped. It's like the first Great Chef. Like you touch a lot on, right. on that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you're exactly right about it is like birthing a baby. It's harder than it was to have my two children, you know, to write these books. But, you know, it's incredible. And one of the things I love the most when I go to a book signing or some kind of event is just talking to the people that are there because they're interested in the topic. So we have, you know, we like the same things, and they just, the fact that they didn't know about this story and they're like, wow, this just blows me away. And just all the history behind these foods that are on the menu and how they were served and how they were presented. You know, it was a time frame when it was the rise of the restaurant. You know, before this 1851 dinner, like earlier in that century, in the 19th century, people would go for a meal at a tavern or, you know, it would be more casual. But then they started to really want some fine dining. In the past, if you wanted fine dining, you would go to somebody's house for dinner, for right. a dinner party.
Well, but and you know, Delmonico's, what they did was they had a lot of the rooms they replicated to look like private dining rooms mm-hmm. to get people.
Exactly.
Which is so fascinating yep. how people were just so accustomed to elegance. And then Delmonico's comes along and really just heightens the elegance, heightens the sophistication. And, you know, in the book right. that we're doing for the Oscars Delmonico book, when you see how people dressed and the diamonds that the women wore and the dresses, and Gypsy Rose Lee is there with the plumes and Ava Gabor is there with the diamonds, it kind of is so sad that we don't do – we need more $32,000 dinners, Becky Diamond.
Right. Oh, I know. It's just amazing. And Delmonico's, you're absolutely right. They set the stage. They set the tone for what was going on in fine dining, and it continues on today. You know, the name just continues yeah. on because it means so much. There's so much weight behind that name, and it's just really, it's a dynasty. It's a restaurant yeah. dynasty that just
it is.
Keeps going. Yeah, it's fabulous.
The Delmonico dynasty.
yeah, it absolutely. You know, that name, you say that name and everyone knows, you know, what they are in the restaurant world.
Yeah.
So
and for those that don't, they learn. And that's why history is important. We know we had Eartha Kitt's daughter on tonight. We're keeping the Eartha songs going. The $1,000 dinner, like, just read what people went through to have dinner, and maybe that will inspire you to take off your sweatpants next time you go out and actually get dressed.
right.
and get dressed. Be inspired
exactly.
to dress again. Be inspired to dine how people really, they took the love and the time to do this. And then what I love about this book, The $1,000 Dinner by Becky Diamond, go get it now, is that literally you have like the competitions in there too. It's all the
right.
fierce. It's like, you right. can, it's just fierce. It's a fierce book.
yeah, absolutely. So, and yeah.
Now, from the whole book, what is it that... What section, what chapter is it that most intrigues you still now that you've written the book?
Oh, wow. One thing that just kind of throughout that just struck me is all the wines that were paired with these dishes. You know, we think of that today, and people take a lot of time, spend a lot of time if they're having a dinner party to make sure they have the correct wine chosen, if they're going to please everyone, you know, all the guests that they've invited. And this is what James Parkinson had to do in order to throw this dinner. And he also had quite a few people that donated bottles of wine, too. So he had to incorporate those into the menu as well. And it's just fascinating to me to look through and see, you know, what wine, because a lot of these they're so different than the wines today. You know, like some of them aren't really even, you know, served, or they might be like a slightly different varietal today, you know, because they were just so different back then. And it's just fascinating to go through and see what the different pairings are and why he might have chose that wine over another. Or, you know, back then, like the first chapter, oysters is the first course, and he pairs his Sauternes with the oysters. Today, we always think, oh, champagne or some kind of crisp white, you know, but Sauternes. And I know in France they still do that a lot of times, but it is an interesting choice that you wouldn't think of, and I love Absolutely. Learning about all these different wines, you know.
And I have to wrap the show up, but I want everybody to learn about this $1,000 dinner, because what it is, it's something that it's history, and you learn about it, figure out what happened, why we dine the way we do, why Delmonico's is such an epic name in the industry. And Becky Diamond, mm-hmm. thank you for taking the time those years to write this book and for reminding us that the $1,000 dinner is just a chapter away. So go to Amazon.com right now, get the book, and I've got to wrap this show up. Becky Diamond, thank you so much for joining me tonight on Max and Friends. We're going to have you back when my book comes out, and we're going to talk more about Delmonico's, and I'm going to see you.
Oh, that would be great. Absolutely. Right. Thank you.
Have a beautiful night. Happy holidays. I've got to wrap this show up. Thank you to Carla Hall from ABC The Chew. Check your local listings for Carla Hall and for The Chew. And, of course, Kit Shapiro and Becky Diamond. Thank you for being friends to Max and Friends tonight. I love you all for listening. Good night, good karma, and take life to the max. Happy holidays. And next week, Gordana Biernat.